806 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings on this Thursday. Thursday is Robert Day around here, so keeping the theme. My buddy Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Dalton. How y'all doing today?
Doing good.
I'm here. I've had a couple days of recovery from Fat Tuesday. I'm good. How are you feeling? All right?
Yeah. We went to a ball on Monday night down over at Fort Whiting.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm still recovering from that.
It's we're all very penitent on Wednesday because we're hurting from the celebration that we had before. All right, lots of talk. You know what happened in the midst of all of our frivolity here along the Gulf Coast? There was another Democrat debate.
There was indeed.
And I did not watch it. I was, you know,
I know you're heartbroken.
Yeah, I was heartbroken that I didn't get to see it. But listen, some of the clips I heard, I said, well, maybe I should have watched it. Everybody talking over one another and all those clips. Do you think that that's probably what's gotten attention? But was there anything of value that came out of that? Did it reset? Was it something new as you look at the candidates?
Well, let's go back to our original criteria. So what's happening in the debate is an expectations game. And candidates, with the exception of candidate Mayor Bloomberg, are trying to continue to raise money and trying to continue to elevate their profile going into whatever the next election cycle is. So for the most part, I'd say six of the seven candidates probably left the debate the exact same place that they started it.
Okay.
The exception being Mayor Bloomberg, who you know is not my first choice, my second choice, or my third choice.
Right.
But be that as it may, I think he did better than he did in the first one, so that there ended up being a lot less concerns about his performance relative to the concerns coming out of the first one.
So So you thought that was it was a not a, that he won the whole thing, but it was debate to debate. It was
his debate performance improved.
Okay,
right. There's no doubt about that. But he doesn't have to raise money. Mm-hmm. Because he's funding his own campaign. So the only thing he has to do is to demonstrate a bare level of competence.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's the way that I would describe that. And I think he crossed that bar. So essentially, if I was to rate the debate as we were doing fairly early on, is I would say everybody won, right? Because
Everybody gets a trophy?
Yeah.
Robert, really?
Nobody really did anything that's going to cause them individual damage.
What about, is that the fact that the people that are galvanized behind Bernie Sanders, it doesn't matter? I mean, the Cuba talk and all that. Let me get a more nuanced question to that. Are you telling me that Bernie Sanders, who I've often said I could go to lunch with him because he and I disagree on almost everything, except some Second Amendment things, which will be a problem for him at some point, but I think he truly believes. You know, I don't.
He's been consistent for 30 plus years.
I guess I like consistency.
Right?
Is what it is.
Right.
But when he don't tell me he's not. And I would hope he'd be more savvy than to have a discussion and be lured into where he is defending, you know, he's saying, but listen, you know, Castro did good things too. You know, I mean, it's like saying Mussolini made the trains run on time. I mean, there's people hear that. And I think that, and listen, it was used against him by moderates in the debate saying, man, you can't, you celebrate in Cuba?
Yeah, there are two threads of this conversation that I find interesting. The first one is I'll go back to grad school. So my first graduate degree is in human resource development with a focus on leadership education. And within the four walls of that, you have all naval officers between, you know, 4 and 6 years of experience debating Hitler and what Hitler did that was good versus what Hitler did that was bad. It's good to have that as an academic conversation because it gets the wheels turning
and
allows you to evaluate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as a political candidate that's on the world stage,
would you say?
As a general rule, I think you would avoid trying to point out the positives in folks who are acknowledged as dictators.
Yeah, I guess with all his time in the Senate, I would say even if he's full of fire and brimstone in his ideas, I would expect him to be a little savvier. Probably ought not.
Truth be told, I don't think that it's going to push the needle in one direction or another, at least at this point in time. The second point that actually popped into my head as you were teeing this up, which I think is particularly significant, is what we have been talking about the entire time of within the Democratic caucus, there needs to be an internal debate on how far to the left the center wants to move. And you could hear some of this in Vice President Biden's comments about, hey, I've been relatively consistent as well, but what would have been considered liberal, 30 plus years ago when I started, is now considered moderate to conservative, mm-hmm. right? And so, but that's a conversation that we actually need to have within the caucus. Yeah, and I think that's a good one.
It's very interesting mm-hmm. Discussion. What about, you mentioned the moderates too. As I was thinking about you the other day, I was in this discussion and I said, well, you know, Bernie Sanders, here he is, he's got, he's leading. But I said, what if you took the numbers behind the moderates? Let's say mm-hmm. Klobuchar and say Buttigieg and, right. and maybe Biden in that. There are more vote shares
mm-hmm.
than Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be a situation where, you know, two would get out and rally behind one, and would those voters...
It'll never happen.
You don't think it'll happen?
No, because you know, because you've been in this game a lot longer than I have, that people run for office for any one of a number of different reasons. Some that are altruistic and some that are a little less than noble. But one thing that is relatively consistent, it's a relatively consistent personality trait, is most candidates have fairly big egos, and particularly
yes,
when
yes.
you have people who have won in the past, for them to be able to look at the situation with a healthy dose of humility and say, I'm going to get out for the better good of the team, is something that just doesn't happen. I mean, even if you – I often joke with my friends who are right of center when we talk about some of the chaos that you saw during the most – recent debates, and I have to remind them about those 19 candidates that were competing on the Republican side.
Sure.
There was some craziness that was going on with our friends on the Republican side as well, so don't forget that. At the end of the day, people get out of races for one reason and one reason only, and that is that they don't have money.
Robert, if going into Super Tuesday, if things go well for Bernie Sanders, I think he could have a pretty healthy lead in delegates after Super Tuesday.
Okay.
I know New York Times had an article this morning where they interviewed 93 super delegates with okay. the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
and the headline was Democratic leaders willing to risk party damage to stop Bernie Sanders. What do you see happening if Bernie does take a commanding lead and looks like he's won the vote to be the nominee? Do you think they'll turn against him?
Well, so I actually talked about this publicly when I was running for the United States Senate during the 2017 special election, and I thought that the old method where the superdelegates were able to vote on the first ballot was problematic, because you had a situation where at the theoretical level, one candidate could win most of the delegates that came from casting votes, and the superdelegates theoretically could push it in the other direction. Every analysis of the 2016 campaign said that that did not happen, but you could see where it could. So coming out of 2016, going into the 2016 convention where they were making up the rules for 2020, Senator Sanders was part of that. And they came up with a compromise solution that basically said superdelegates will not vote on the first ballot. So as long as a candidate goes into the convention with a majority of delegates in hand, it never comes to bear. But to answer your question directly, if he goes in and he has the most, but it's not that proverbial 50% plus one, I could absolutely see the superdelegates turning on him.
If we're looking at this, we're going to run the news break, come back more with Robert Kennedy Jr. Kennedy for Alabama tomorrow night at 6.
Yes.
We'll preview.
Yes, we can do that when we get back from the break.
All right, good deal. Coming right back. This is Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Online, y'all, at FMTalk1065.com. You can grab the podcast of this show and the 40-plus hours a week of live local radio we do. It's waiting for you right now. Go to FMTalk1065.com. FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Thank you, Kane, for the traffic update. Check back in, too, with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. Like 4 days in a row without rain. Same thing upstate, too. That is good news. We're trying to get these rivers. They're not going to fall. They're not going to fall down, like, back inside the banks before we get the next rain. But we just get a little bit of wiggle room, a little margin here before the next bunch of rain hits us next week. So 4 days of dry, but he'll talk more about that coming up. All right, continue our conversation with Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama, Friday nights here at FM Talk 106.5. And the preview?
Yes, we've been talking about that during this season. One of the things we've been really excited about is that we've continued our candidate spotlights for candidates on the Democratic side of the aisle. And we've actually spent a lot of time focused on school board issues. And so I think by the time it's all done and over, we will have interviewed a total of 5 candidates, 3 of them running for state school board positions for either spot 1 or spot 5, and then folks running for the Mobile County School Board as well. So excited about that and looking forward to having another opportunity tomorrow night.
Let's talk some school board. Let's talk State Board of Education.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Yes.
So this Amendment 1 that is being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of stuff y'all really got to you hear enough, and we'll continue to do candidate spotlights. Robert does. I do it. I mean, you're going to get those. But CA spotlights we should do as well.
We should absolutely do those.
Because even though we had a law go through a couple years ago to amend the language in a constitutional amendment to make it more, put it in language I can understand.
It's still Charlie Brown's teacher, man.
You read through it and you go, didn't it just contradict itself? Mm-hmm. Is it a yes or a no? I would remand the legislature to go back and do a better job at that amendment. It should be written in language. You don't have to dumb it down. I'm not saying dumb it down. Write it in language that is effective and active and non- oxymoronic, that's where we end up with this stuff.
You know, the other thing is, and you and I were talking about this a little bit off air about the number of campaign commercials that are floating around the ether that are focused on individual candidates,
mm-hmm.
right? And regardless of how you feel about those, positive or negative, it would be good to have some public service money investing in these amendments to just explain what they are in plain language the way that you're just talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the time when I talk to people about these amendments, this one has a little bit of visibility, but invariably you'll be looking at something on a ballot that you haven't heard anybody talk about,
right.
And you don't even understand what it's supposed to be.
Yes, so you're sitting there going, and people go, oh, that's the stuff that comes after all the names. Yes, you go down towards your end of your ballot, mm-hmm. and there are your CAs. But let's talk about Amendment 1. And this is basically the way I understand it, and in regular language, is whether the State Board of Education would be staffed by appointment or, like it is now, by election.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest way to understand
right.
it right
so
now.
And I will say this, and I've said it before in this discussion, I'm somebody right now, my feelings are, I believe, to keep it this way with the will of the people and the vote. At the same time, that sword is sharp on both sides. We the people better do a dang good job of paying attention to State Board of Education. People know more about what goes on with some of their state's senator or some of their state's House member, mm-hmm. than they do what goes on in their own state.
And I think when folks ask me, what did I learn by spending some time with my name on the ballot,
mm-hmm.
I think it was an appreciation for the offices that aren't necessarily the marquee ones.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think has been my blessing has just been this opportunity to start to interact and understand. You know, it could be, you know, the license commissioner or the revenue commissioner, which mm-hmm. is things I was never even thinking about before. And so to your point, yes, I think it's very important to understand these other non-marquee positions, if you will, and then hold them accountable.
Yes.
Just like we do everybody else. You know, when University of South Alabama wants to do a football stadium,
mm-hmm.
the Mobile City Council meeting is packed. But when you're talking about some
right.
normal ordinance, then it's virtually empty.
Well said. So this vote that y'all we'll all see here is Amendment 1. Whether you want to be able to continue this situation where we vote for our State Board of Education, or it would be at the dictate of the governor mm-hmm. to appoint people to those positions. Now, if I'm playing devil's advocate for a second and making the argument here that the governor could use information and all these different people to make sure she had the best vetted choice.
Mm-hmm.
for members of the State Board of Education, have the people with the best credentials going in there.
Right.
But that is also the opinion of one person in the executive branch versus the will of the people to vote the person in there that they believe best serves them.
Yeah, I think we actually had the same conversation when we were talking about issues within the State Democratic Executive Committee.
Right.
When you and I had that conversation about the rules that were applying to who was appointed versus mm-hmm. who was elected. And the principle that I teed up at that particular time was, if you have a position, to the extent possible, you want to have more elected, less appointed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that my philosophy on this Amendment 1 is the same, right? So what I haven't been able to get my head around yet is what would be different
mm-hmm.
from the perspective of the governor appointing versus the citizens electing. And so if something's not going to be different from a resource standpoint, for example, then I just can't get my head around why it's better for it to come out of the mind of the governor, who's obviously being influenced by a smaller pool of people than a individual person who is elected having to respond to their constituency. I can't get my head around it until the point that somebody can tell me what is the thing that's actually different.
You and I are on the same page on that. We talked to this morning about SB, I think it's 183. I may be wrong on the number, but that came out of committee in the state executive committee, Senate Executive Committee on Governmental Affairs put this bill out that would be, y'all, this is the one that would basically, after the end of Jim Ziegler's term, because he's term limited, would then move to not have a elected state auditor, and it would basically fall under the legislature. That's a question where you go, well, if you're consolidating government, you're streamlining government, you'll say, well, why not? It would save money. But does it? I talked to Jim Ziegler about it, and he said, you still have to do the duties that his office is doing.
Right.
And so you would have to have more people hired in whatever, you know, auspice it goes under. He said you don't eliminate the necessity for the state auditor's job. The people that physically got to go and look at the stuff and write down it's here or it's not here.
Okay, so keep me honest here. I actually believe the state auditor position comes out of the state constitution.
I think it is. And that's why it'd have to be a CA, yeah.
Right, and so you would end up having to have a constitutional amendment. I think there's probably a larger conversation about the state constitution, particularly coming out of 1901, some of the racist language that still exists in there. But generally speaking, if you wanted to take the perspective of a conservative and saying that you want government to be smaller, then there is a argument that says, yes, you could probably consolidate some of the functions as long as those functions remain under the umbrella of a position that is elected versus appointed, which is what we were talking about here on the school board issue. I think it's probably 6-1, half dozen the other.
They say the it would move it. Here it go. It would, because they've amended it once already since it was just in committee. It would then go into state auditor's duties, appointments, and responsibilities would be transferred to the existing office of the state treasurer. State treasurer, of course, elected position. So that would be the election mechanism there.
Right.
Because before that change, they had it just transferred to the Department of Examiners of Public Accounts, which
is not
elected.
Right.
So I guess this last, earlier this week, I think they did that tweak and changed it. That does change the discussion, I think, because it's not as simple as before when I was looking at it. I said, wait a second, you're taking something that we did have a voice in,
right,
and now you're moving it into somewhere we don't. Maybe it's one more step, but you do have the state treasurer responsible for that.
So this is better, but it still goes back to what I teed up when we were talking about the state school board. It's like, what is the problem that we're trying to solve that's going to be solved by making this change? And no one typically talks about that.
Right.
And so it leaves me wondering, is it a lot about the personality of the incumbent, although he's term limited it out?
Right.
Or is it really a problem that we're trying to solve?
Let's talk about what happens here on Tuesday.
Yes.
We've got Super Tuesday coming up. And by the way, too, we've been talking about our coverage on election night. Robert Kennedy Jr. is going to help me out as well.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. It's going to be starting at 7 on Tuesday night and going until we get enough information in that we can call what has happened. Obviously, most of my attention has been spent on AL1 and the Senate race. The Senate race has gotten interesting. It's more than interesting.
Yeah.
But the movement here in the polls and even the drop of Sessions has been, because, I mean, he held for a long time with, you know, 30s, upper 30s, and now dwindling in some polls. Now, you could see another poll come out tomorrow that could show it
has
all different.
Has he lost his top spot yet, though?
He has
seen
not.
It yet.
Well, anyway. There's one. Well, that's not true. There's one poll. It was a Club for Growth poll.
Okay.
Now, Club for Growth, like I've said, y'all, is anybody but Bradley Byrne, is how they're aligned.
Right.
But they were kind of, without being officially, behind Sessions. But they put a poll out that showed Tuberville in the lead.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what if they've switched horses or what. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen that poll yet, Sean, but my thoughts are you're probably looking at a runoff, like we talked about before, and it looks like the runoff is probably going to be Attorney General Sessions and Coach Tuberville.
Yeah.
It's probably what it looks like right now.
It is going to be interesting to see how the voting goes in Mobile and Baldwin counties with two, you know, hometown guys with Byrd and Sessions.
Yep.
It's Tuberville, and we're going to run out of time here, but I think Tuberville's completely just bypassed this area. I mean, he's had some presence here, but not much. Like, his strategy is elsewhere.
Let the local guys split the vote.
All right, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, Kennedy for Alabama, 6 o'clock p.m. here on FM Talk 106.5. And we'll be talking about education. So give us a listen. Give us a call. Share your thoughts.
And learn something. See what I did there? We'll learn something.
Learn a little something. There you go.
All right,
man. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, man. Coming right back. More of Mobile Mornings. Phone number, if you don't have it already, 343-0106.
8:35 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Time to head over to McConnell Automotive. Talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
All right, Don. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, morning. We've been talking Mardi Gras trucks, and still a great opportunity to get over to McConnell and pick up one of those, but also some great deals right now on SUVs.
Yeah, you know, I told you off air, Don, we got a great message about having 0% on Acadias and Yukons, man, and those are two of the best GMCs or any kind of SUVs for that matter on the road. And, you know, people are paying 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% interest. Man, this is an opportunity just for a few days till the end of the month to come trade that vehicle in, man, upgrade and lower payments in some cases. And what I like, Dalton, is when people are making those 0% payments to the bank, you know, they're paying for their car and not to the bank. And I love that. And then I think we have 18 Mardi Gras trucks. If anybody saw Mardi Gras, they saw some beautiful trucks, man. And, you know, we have discounts on those trucks. None of our competitors do. And I hate to brag about it, but if people like saving money on, you know, the AT4 X31, you've got about 18 left where they've been selling kind of like hotcakes. So our website, buddy, is the best place to check them out, or call us, you know, McConnellAutomotive.com, and we appreciate you guys helping us get the word out.
And we appreciate you, Mitch. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. You too, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
Right, 8:37, and let's check in with Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, and happy belated Mardi Gras.
God, man, I'm glad it's over, Sean.
You know, I started thinking about this. Okay, so, yes, I am too, but so we had Fat Tuesday, and now we have Super Tuesday coming. We called it Super Fat Tuesday the other day as we mashed them up. Fat Tuesday is coming. I just wonder if it's not the same. So you're, you know, in the Mardi Gras season, you build towards Fat Tuesday. More parades, more throws, more overindulging. Maybe the same thing is true in a primary coming up to Tuesday, that they're all going to, you know, it's ramping up. It finally crests on Tuesday, and then they read the results late that night or on their, on Wednesday to follow.
Hopefully, right? Yeah. Definitely this is an exciting Super Tuesday for us. I mean, there's a lot going on. We've had those years that it's kind of like, oh, well, ho-hum, but there is a lot going on. I mean, we have, on the Democratic side of the ballot, we actually play a role in their primaries and in their selection process for president. So that's kind of different for us in some regard. And then of course we've got U.S. Senate race, the House race. We've got a million different things going on. Amendment 1. There's a lot of things happening. So there's a lot of reason to be interested next Tuesday and to get out and vote.
You know, AL1 and Senate. Those are interesting. People don't think about, you know, the history of this. It was rare over time that AL1 was something that was, you know, we did have the special and all that when Joe Bonner stepped down, but usually this has just been a place people stay for a long time, then hand it down to the next in line.
Right. Not a coronation every once in a while. There's sort of been a coronation of the next guy, but we all knew who it was going to be, right?
Right. Fair enough. So at this point, we do not know that in AL1 and in Senate, that seat that Jeff Sessions had held since I was a young man when he first took that. Now, you know, that has been in put up for grabs because of the special that went on there. Mm-hmm. Doug Jones, that I think is just a custodian of that Senate seat right now, waiting for a Republican.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's going to be tough for Doug. I mean, I wouldn't count Doug Jones out as a tough competitor in that general election. I think it'll be a reasonably tight race, but what that means in Alabama, I don't know. The certainly the GOP primary is fascinating, and you know where it is. I've kind of had that thought process that if, you know, Jeff was in there for 20 years, and if people really loved Jeff that much, then he would be over 50%. If we all know who he is, and I think it's been bad for him when, you know, he's polling in the 30s. That to me doesn't bode well. And I think he's beatable in that regard. I think, you know, I wrote in my column, I believe you'll see Tuberville and him in the runoff, and Tuberville just generates a lot of excitement. He's that kind of rock star senator that people like. And I know there are a million people that will say, geez, what does that mean? I worked up on the Senate, you know, when you had Fred Thompson come in, or somebody who has done something else outside of the Senate. The senators get all giggly when somebody comes in. You know, they like that. They're excited about it.
Okay, but
that person automatically becomes a voice in the Senate.
Yeah, I don't care what they like in Washington. The job of the senator is to the state of Alabama. You know, that's.
I think it's good for Alabama. I mean, honestly, I'm sorry. You know, Jeff was a backbencher the entire time he was up there. He was not somebody that people sat around saying, "What's Jeff Sessions up to?"
I don't know. Let's play that out, because I mean, for night after night after night for 8 years of Barack Obama, you looked at the cable news shows, and live from the rotunda, there stood our Senator Jeff Sessions speaking about what basically became the planks of Trump's platform.
Yeah, but again, what you talk about doing the job for the people of Alabama, and you know what we all look for is, okay, Shelby's got to bring home the bacon, right? Because Jeff ain't bringing home the bacon. Well, he's talking about judicial stuff.
Well, Shelby had all the bacon. I mean, he had the whole freezer pack full of bacon.
Well,
there wasn't, so
Shelby
that left Sessions
forever,
to
I'm
do.
Just saying, you know, we've got. I understand, but I do think that. I guess I will just say I think that Jeff has his time up there was well spent. It's fine, but I don't think. I just personally think that if he was that exciting to the electorate, he would be polling a lot higher.
Come on, let's not pretend that the situation is not about the recusal. If there wasn't the recusal, which, you know, I've said he was did what he was supposed to do, and if you're surprised that Jeff Sessions follows rule of law, you hadn't been looking around much. But the recusal is that if there was not the recusal, he'd be polling over 50%, Rob. He'd be polling over 50. People still would like him.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know that exactly. Regardless of what happened, I mean, that's why he's there. If he didn't go join Trump's administration, he'd still be there. So, yeah, I get that. But it is what happened. And, you know, those things do add to all that. And I think he's, you know, his campaign has been a difficult one when you're trying to, you know, you can't stand up to the president on those things. He won't stand up to the president on those things, but he's also trying to cuddle up to the president at the same time. It makes it difficult, and I think people look at it and say that's not. It doesn't make him look very strong. I think it makes him look weak. That's just, you know, that's the way I see it. And you know, people say, well, we need him back, and I always say, well, why? What is it that we need back from Jeff? I don't think Jeff goes up there and automatically becomes a leader in the Senate.
Do you think Tuberville does?
I think you're going to see Tuberville all over TV if he's a senator. Yes, I think he will become a face of the Republican Party very quickly.
Have you heard him engage on policy questions?
Look, I mean, I'm just telling you what I think about it. It's, you know, I think that you will see him get up there and talk about be somebody that is being sought after very quickly to be, you know, a leader there, because that's just how it works in the Senate. I mean, they you look at famous people who become senators and they quickly move into that role. Al Franken's another one. I mean, look at just, it happens over and over again. There's a lot of examples of it.
All right. Let's do this. Run to the news break. We'll come back and we'll talk about AL1 as well. And what's the cover of the new Landyap out now? Talking to our buddy Rob Hulbert from Landyap, landyapmobile.com. And talk about getting, maybe for 2020, getting subscribed so you can do it online like I do. Keeps all that ink off my fingers. Right? Right, 850 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Continue our conversation with Rob Hulbert. New Lagniappe out on the streets now. And tell us about Cover Story.
Well, the cover story is, you know, Super Tuesday. We've got some American flag action on the cover. And we're basically trying to give you all as much information as we can before you go to the polls. So there's your coverage of a lot of different things in there. Most of all the local races, the statewide races, all that kind of stuff. So it hopefully provides people with the information they need to make good decisions.
That is for sure. And we talk about the Senate race. Your thoughts here on AL1?
Man, that's a tough one. I say in my column this week, you know, I have a sense that the other two campaigns feel Hightower is leading because they keep saying stuff about Hightower to me. So I kind of feel like that's really the only reason, because every poll I see, they're all within a few points of each other, and there's a lot of undecided. You may have seen something different than I have, but
32% undecided in one of those polls.
Yeah,
32%.
The undecided is huge, right? You know, and so that's a big thing. My sense is just that I think it's going to be Hightower and Carl, but it wouldn't surprise me for Pringle to be in there. They've all run good races. They're all good people. I think we have an embarrassment of wealth of people running in this race. There's good people there.
Yeah, it's one of the situations that I guess causes me to gig them some, because I believe, you know, they'll talk in ads about supporting President Trump. I believe all of them are going to support President Trump. I think what we're trying to do here is figure out who's going to be the most effective at doing that. It's they're all going to support the president, but who's going to be the best at it? Who's going to be the best for AL1? Who's going to, you know, do the best job at being our person representing Southwest Alabama?
Yeah, we've met with just about everybody, and everybody that comes in, you know, I go, yeah, I could see that, you know, I could see that person do a good job, you know. So I mean, it's not, there's nobody that's walked in and just said, whoa, that's just ridiculous, you know.
Right. That's a good point.
I mean, they're all reasonable human beings, and I think all have good intentions.
And let's talk about what is, you know, just talk about this with Robert Kennedy Jr. and Dalton. I talk about this a bunch. Is while there's so much attention paid to the names, right? We're talking about names for Senate, names for House, but you get something like Amendment 1, and I bet you go down the street. Yeah, I mean, you'll get an opinion on AL1, you get an opinion on Senate. You ask about Amendment 1, I bet you the majority of folks you ask on the street would say what?
Yeah, I mean, I've asked people who are, you know, involved in policy around here, what do you think about Amendment 1? And they're like, we're not real sure. You know, it's like, yeah, kind of good. I think that's even what Robert Kennedy kind of said. It was like, you know, I'm not sure what it does. I guess I could take the devil's advocate side of it. I'm not sure either, but I have seen what we've been doing, and we're 50th, and I don't know. I'm not totally against, I'm not cheerleading for one or the other, but I guess I could see maybe there is some benefit to a staggered terms with governors selecting these with Senate approval. We just have had such a hard time keeping superintendents. I think that's been a real big issue, and maybe that offers some opportunities to get some consistency and get some people in there. I know it's great to have people elect folks, but I kind of also feel like sometimes these Board of Education jobs are sort of bottom feeder, I want to get into politics jobs. And it's kind of like with the auditor, with Ziegler's job. I can't think of anything Ziegler's done that actually pertains to his job.
Well, that's not what gets attention, but he does. I mean, he does the job of state auditor. I mean,
but people say, well, okay, well, do we need to get rid of the state auditor's position or move it under the treasurer? My feeling about it is, move it under the treasurer.
So you want to have less. Well, and here's one of the things that people need to know. I talked about it earlier. When they first brought this Senate bill up, it was going to move it into a department that was not a voted. It was going to be examiners of public accounts.
Yeah.
That has changed now. Like you mentioned, state treasurer, yes, at least there is if it was wildly out of control, you could take it up come voting time with the state treasurer.
Yeah. Well, Well, I will just say this from our standpoint, from a newspaper standpoint, the last two state auditors have been people who do not answer any questions, do not give you any information when you ask for it. And so that has been problematic from my standpoint, is that there's nobody over them to make them do anything they don't want to do, and nobody pays any attention to them unless they're talking about bridges or things that don't have anything to do with their job. So it is, you know, as far as the previous auditor and Ziegler as well, they don't return phone calls. When we ask them for information that actually relates to auditing things, they don't give you that information. So I don't see a reason in the world to keep that as an elected position that is just somebody who grandstands all the time. And I think that's what we've got right now. And, you know, if that's the template, then why do we need that?
Okay, let's go back to Amendment 1 for a second. You're talking about people getting in, but I think State Auditor Jim Ziegler's wife, Jackie Ziegler, I mean, from the education world and gets in it. That's, you know, if people are running for that office and saying, hey, here's why I can make a difference. I've been in the, you know, front lines of this, that, or the other. I understand these things. I'm going to take that message. To turn over to a executive branch appointment, yes, with sign-off from the legislature, but an appointment by fiat from the executive branch, we're losing our voice in government.
Well, I mean, it's sort of the same thing you said about taking the auditor under the treasury. You know, the governor is more answerable in terms of education. They can't pull off and say, oh, well, you know, I don't have anything to do with that. I mean, and there's also the concept that, you know, I was talking to somebody involved with it, you know, the other day, and they said, well, you know, there may be some people that are on the board currently who would be appointed. I don't have super strong feelings either way. I'm just pointing out there's a possibility maybe of having a little more accountability from the governor's office, in my mind, that they have some buy-in on this education, because we're doing this, you know, on the educational front, because I'm putting these people in place to get something done. You know, it's to me, I look at it too. It's like the Public Service Commission. You know, they're elected, right? And that position is flush with money from people who want something. Do you feel strongly that the Public Service Commission does a great job as an elected organization? You know, I don't know that I feel that way. I'm not sure that elected necessarily means better.
Okay, but I can, once again, just turn this around. Somebody who could be very, very good at the job for the education side may have some other political difference with the person who's in the Blunt Mansion at that time, the executive branch, and they could be prevented from getting the job because of some other disagreement on some other policy.
Very likely, but I mean, it's, you know, by the same token, you could also have somebody who doesn't get in because they don't get the money or the backing or whatever, you know, and I mean, you know, it's like Jackie Ziegler, great. She's got her husband who's, you know, beating the drum for her all the time too. So it's, I mean, I think there, people have different things that make them electable versus what make them get appointable. So, I mean, there are variances on both sides. I don't really see a huge difference either way in that regard. And at least the thing with the governors, with Amendment 1, it does stagger it. It does make them make an approval by the legislature. So, you know, if it's just some total goofball, at least the legislature could theoretically knock them out and not approve them. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm saying I think there could be something there. And, you know, it's one of those things of, you know, how we're so bad right now. Could we do something different? Maybe doing something different will help.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll pick this discussion up after Super Tuesday. Rob Holbert with LandNap. Thank you, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right. Be back in 3 for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher Show next.